Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, there's a writer who I've been talking to since his very first book. His name is Juno Diaz, and we're always thrilled when, at the variance of time of a comet, he comes streaking through Los Angeles and makes it a point, a generous point, to visit us here at KCRW. 20 years ago, approximately, he promised his goddaughters to write a book in which they would be characters. And the result has come only now, 20 years later, in the form of, to my mind, a devastatingly beautiful and moving children's book called Island Born. It's officially for ages 4 to 8, but it's the kind of children's book I find every time I go through it, I see a new joke, a new detail, a little perfection that makes the book readable again and again. Now, I assume that any child in an American classroom who was born outside America is feeling a certain kind of anxiety about the others in the room. They may not be born in America either, but they're having to make a home for themselves. And this book is about a little girl who makes a home for herself, not in the Dominican Republic of her family, but in their imagination of the place and her imagination of the place. And what's ingenious about this book is that the pictures see the world through her eyes. She's seeing her family's imaginary island, and she's bringing it back to school. They've all been assigned to describe the island they come from. She was a baby. She doesn't remember the island.
Yep. And also, we are not just the stories we tell. We also are the valence of the stories we tell. And so what's interesting about Lola, why I found her a fascinating character, is that when you don't remember a place, it's very easy for you to take that as a blow, to take that as a serious deficit. And Lola begins in that place. But what we find out as we go along is that that's not Lola's default. She's a person who always spins stories so that she doesn't end up being a loser, so that she doesn't end up being at the receiving end of some formula that leaves her out. And in that way, I think that she's a very wise, creative, and self-affirming young person.
And they're all inventing the story of their lives. And Lola hasn't done that yet. She might be the youngest child in Mrs. Obie's class. And she, you know, they're all gabbing away about what they're going to draw for this assignment. But she doesn't have any memory of it.
Yeah, they have much more immediate resources.
And we find out certain things, the things that she might have remembered hiding under the table with her abuela during a catastrophic storm that blows all the houses into the sky. These are the things you try to forget.
And that our individual memory is not the final arbiter of what is collectively remembered. That ultimately, you might not have, Michael, a memory of your time in, say, fourth grade, but a bunch of people might remember you in fourth grade. And it is all those memories together that make up the reality of you in fourth grade, even if you don't recall it. And this is, I think, something that's very important to this book. This book sort of reminds people that memory, in fact, is a collective activity.
Not only a collective activity, it's pivotal in forming community. But coming, spouting out of her notebook is this very book we're reading.
Yeah.
Mr. Meir, the super in her building, tells her about the monster that no one else will tell her about. Now, what is that monster?
Well, I would say first and foremost, the monster is the end point of Lola's journey. Here's this young woman who's trying to discover what has always been in front of her nose, what she's always been surrounded by. These stories about the island, these memories about the island, the reality about the island. It's all around her. It saturates her life. But until she sets out to not only understand it, but in some ways to re-enchant it, to create a generative relationship with it, a collaborative relationship with it. Because you can't really feel a place unless you're dialoguing with it. If only that place speaks, if only that place has authority to tell you something and you can't tell anything back, then the relationship is dead. And Lola has to create this relationship with this island and she has to re-enchant it. It's a process of re-enchantment. So as she goes through this process, she discovers, of course, that no place is perfect. And she discovers that as with children, so adults, that all of us have experiences where we're haunted by things that are not right, things that are destructive, things that are frightening. And this is not something to turn away from. In fact, Lola faces this monster that has possessed the island, that once possessed the islands, that once caused all this harm, that in some ways is like a shadow figure. And she's not left scared. She's not left hurt. In fact, she's left far more empowered.
I'm talking to Juno Diaz, who has done children and parents and readers everywhere the service of writing a children's book called Island Born. The secret question is, why did we have to leave? And no one answers that question until the reticent Mr. Meir tells her about the monster. Now, he's not telling her the truth.
No.
He's telling her what it was for all of us, mythologically, metaphorically, that chased us out of the sense of safety. What are some of the possibilities of what that monster is in the Dominican Republic?
Well, I was thinking of it explicitly as the island being both the Dominican Republic and not the Dominican
yes.
Republic. Therefore, my idea always that the monster was most directly a political monstrosity. That this is what happens when a set of politics or an individual seizes a nation and does great harm. And so many people across the world are familiar with that experience. In fact, I would argue the majority of the world, when they think of what they have inherited from their parents and their grandparents, is a legacy of fighting political monsters. I think if we wanted to kind of narrow it down most exquisitely, we would say the political monstrosities in the Dominican Republic. We would say one of them would be Rafael Trujillo, the dictator, and then the post-dictator dictator, Joaquin Balaguer, who followed Trujillo and, you know, kind of did his, in some ways, you know, followed up a lot of his destructiveness.
This is a history that has haunted all of your books. And here, the tyrant takes on the name the monster. He takes on the role he would take. And it's my speculation. You see, Lola is very, very moved by the story. And she says goodbye as she goes to school the next day to Mr. Mir, the monster slayer, and he says goodbye to the daughter of a hero. Well, not mentioned, we see that Lola doesn't have a father on sight, and we become aware very silently that the father has been the victim of the monster, of the tyrant. And I only saw that the third time through, that stories are full of what you name and invent and what you keep hidden. And Lola's story is the story of her coming to consciousness of a thing she'll spend the rest of her life understanding.
Yeah, well, Michael, very, I would argue, very perceptive. And I myself always think that if an artist is inviting you to explore a silence that they're putting before you, that always means that besides that, you should look for the greater silence that the artist is trying to hide from you. And I think that that was, you know, a lot of what I was thinking about. I think the ultimate silence in this book about this little girl, and one that I think is fascinating how no one's really touched upon it until you brought it up, is where is her father? And, you know, when we discover that the monster is able to make families disappear, well, there's only one missing person in this whole story. So yeah, no, I myself didn't expect anyone to kind of think about it that way.
It hit me in the gut, you know, because the book is so beautiful. It's got illustrations by Leo Espinosa. So I see all sorts of hidden things in these pictures. There's a juice store in El Norte.
Mm.
But when we see that juice store on the island, it's called Hugos. Hugos are the names for juices.
Mm-hmm.
Who goes there?
Yes. We love that joke.
Yes. Multilingual puns, things that are built in for you to see later, that I think give a book eternal life. You know, they're the books that you remember when you read them before you got all of them. Then, as you read again over the years, or maybe eventually read to your own children, you remember the day that the book opened up to you.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just another book. It was a book that had all sorts of secrets for you, that was talking to you all the time. This is my guest, Junot Diaz, reading the opening pages of his book, Island Born.
Every kid in Lola's school was from somewhere else. Hers was the school of far away places. Mai was from a city so big that it was like its own country. India and Camila were from a stony village at the tippy top of the world. Mateo lived in a desert so hot even the cactus fainted. Nu was born in a jungle famous for its tigers and its poets. And Lola was from the island. So when her teacher, Ms. Obi, told the class, "Please draw a picture of the country you are originally from, your first country, and bring it in tomorrow," everyone got super excited. "I'm going to put in pyramids," said Dahlia. "And I'll draw a canal this long," Franklin said. "There's going to be a mongoose in mine," Nelson yelled. Nelson always yelled. Everyone was talking about their drawings. Everyone but Lola. Lola, you see, loved to draw. But she had left the island when she was just a baby, so she didn't remember any of it.
Junot Diaz, reading the opening pages from his book for children from ages 4 to 8, Island Born. It's published by Dial. And, you know, I feel silly saying ages 4 to 8. That's their target group. My target group is your heart and my heart and the author's heart. And did we hit the target? Did we hit the heart? And maybe if we didn't hit the heart, did we hit perhaps the soul? This is the story of immigration. This is the story of the multiculture. But most of all, it's the story of how all those things blend in the imagination. And that really is, on the final page, the book's explosion.
Yeah, she lives surrounded by very funny people. That's, I think, the other part of it, is that for a community that's endured so much, it's not a surprise that this community is also full of mirth. As you pointed out, with the name of the juice store, who goes there full of jokes, you know, really bringing as much light as they can to the world. And I think that, too, is part of who Lola is.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Junot Diaz about his latest book, Island Born. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Junot Diaz about his latest book, Island Born, a celebration of culture and history from the eyes of a young girl. What I love also is, like many things that are happening now, this book has come out simultaneously in a Spanish edition.
Yeah.
In Spanish, it's called Lola. In English, it's called Island Born. And because of my friendship with Art Spiegelman and Chris Ware, I'm aware of how much work it takes to get the colors right with a printer. And so much attention has gone into this book. You've got one experience before this. You worked with one of the Hernandez brothers on an illustrated edition of some of your stories.
Yes.
This is a children's book, and this is a book illuminated by the light of childhood, the light of childhood imagination. The teacher is Miss Obi. She's Japanese. Everyone is a foreigner, and certainly everyone is a foreigner to one another until they become known to each other. And this is, I think, your cure for the terrible feeling everyone has it of coming into school on the first day, and whoever you are not someone who knows how to be there.
Yeah, it's a new world. I think that's, you know, the realization that all of us have, there comes that moment when, if things go well for you, if you have the peace of mind, the space, and some mentorship, that realization that we're really in this together and we better figure each other out in ways that leave space for all of us to have dignity, or nothing's going to get better. You know, this idea that we can get rid of all our differences and that we're all the same at the bottom line sort of hides the really hard work of what it takes to get to know people and to leave them with dignity intact. That's not an easy thing. It's not an easy thing.
Now tell me, Junot. Of course, we all know this book didn't take literally 20 years to write.
No, no.
No book does.
I would have, oh God, I would have, wow, I don't know what I would have done, but I wouldn't be here talking to you if it had taken 20 full years.
But What made it difficult? What was the difficult, most difficult part of getting the story told?
The truth is that the bar is set very high for children's book. I would argue 3/4 of children's book, even more, that are published are wonderful. They're enjoyable, but ultimately they will be immediately forgotten. That it takes a lot of luck and a lot of hard work together to come up with anything that might speak beyond the concerns of just a hasty evening reading. And I just wanted to see if I could write a book that had an entirely different emotional scale. I was just seeing, could I engage in issues that I didn't see a lot of children's book engaging? You know, celebrating diversity, underscoring important values, all of that I saw, and I think that they're fantastic. But as usual, I wasn't going to write a children's book unless I was offering a new map. Not that what I'm doing is completely different or completely novel, but that I'm taking part in this other movement where people are beginning to tackle issues that for many children is their everyday, but that in countries like the United States and Canada, it's still not common for us to think of children's books engaging in these larger national political concerns.
And I thought that what you had done here in making the shift between telling a child to imagine the country she came from to telling a child to describe the imagination of the people around her and her own imagination.
Yeah, you hit it. That's where our worlds live. The idea that our worlds live in our experience of them, okay, but really our worlds live in how our imagination holds them. And I could not think of a better shortcut for Lola to be able to recuperate this island and to connect with it than speaking to people about their imaginations.
Well, and she draws her own conclusions.
And rightly so.
That there are colors, that there's more color than there is air, and that there's more music than there is colors. She hears about a place. I always thought when I first read about Neverland and Peter Pan that that is where I came from. You know, a place where we can fly, a place where there were pirates and Indians and mermaids, and we are the lost boys making our way through these worlds that we'll never witness in life, but that are at the center of our imagination. And I thought of Lola as being someone who's afraid of an assignment, who hasn't gone through that, only to discover that she's the best person to do the assignment because she is able to fail at it. Yeah. And to find people who, at first, Mr. Muir is too crusty.
The old grump.
Grump, old superintendent of the building. I remember him. My mom used to say that Vincent, our superintendent, was growing potatoes in his ears.
You know, Lola gets this situation. Well, she has this really interesting ethos that I thought was very beautiful, where Lola granted to everyone she spoke authority. She took everything they said as authoritative. But in turn, she also allowed herself to have authority about her version of the story. And I think that that's really important. Everybody doesn't have to be wrong so that you are right. And I think Lola's idea of like, we're all right, is what made this story possible.
Now tell me, did you know what Lola looked like before you saw your illustrator Leo Espinosa's version of her?
No, I give him very, very specific and in some ways strict kind of marching orders. In fact, I wanted Lola to look like my oldest sister, Marisabella, which she does. My oldest sister looks exactly like Lola when we were young, had the same exact hair, the same exact Africanidad, you know. And so in that way, Leo not only met my kind of sort of strict mandate, but exceeded it. The way that he was able to reinvent it and just kind of imbue her character with the spark of the living, which is so hard in art. It's so hard.
Well, the pictures are very alive, and many of them have to do with the fact that, like any writer I know, he gets the details right. Lola is writing in her notebook, and so of course her backpack is open, and inside the backpack we see the crayons and the pencils that she is using as she walks. She's reaching behind her to grab at her next color. And it's very nice to see so many postures that we recognize of children playing, of children turning around in their desk to talk to one another.
He went for broke. It was almost as if he was drawing the only book he would ever draw. I mean, that's how it feels to me. It's his operatic work, which is not to say that there wouldn't be others, but my God, he went for broke.
This book filled me with pleasure. If there's a child in your life, this is the book. If you're contemplating having children, this is the book to put on your shelf right now so that it pre-arrives the child that's waiting to come. I was so happy, Juno, that you had done this and done it so well. It really clutched my heart and my imagination. It was really a pleasure.
I appreciate it. Very, very humbling.
Thank you, Juno.
Thank you, Michael. Great to see you again.
I've been talking with Juno Diaz, author of Island Born, the new kids' book published by Dow Books. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, Michelle Escobar. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, Sean Sullivan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join us again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Roberta Scott is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.